Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. Now, today's episode is kind of a best of. We're going to be looking at some of the best stories this past year because, honestly, the station, we're having a bit of a problem concerning funding. And here to help me discuss that is
Rosina Ricardo.
She's going to be telling us a little bit about how you can help support CJAM. If this work matters to you, you should help keep it going. Everyone here puts their heart and soul into this work. And speaking of putting heart and soul into work, here's a clip you all might remember from Ann Summers, the National Council on Disabilities. In this next segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Ann Summers from the National Council on Disabilities.
Sure. We are an independent federal agency that began in 1978. When we began 40 years ago, we were not independent. We were actually a small office within the U.S. Department of Education. And where we were in the Department of Education, our function at the time was to provide recommendations and assessments of how the federal education policies and programs were faring for students with disabilities. And you can imagine that in that role, occasionally, from time to time, we had some not so positive things to say about how education was going for students with disabilities. What that is in the States is at a federal level, in 1938, we had a program begin called 14C in our Fair Labor Standards Act, which on the whole was a wonderful piece of legislation. It set up a lot of protections for child labor and other areas that were very laudable. And at the time, 1938, expectations were pretty low for people with disabilities in the U.S. And so the idea was to give folks with disabilities an opportunity to get some job skills and hopefully find full-time employment. But in order for them to access an on-ramp to employment, this law allowed employers to pay people with disabilities less than the minimum wage. That law has persisted for 80 years, and what we have found is that in lots of instances, people with disabilities languish in these settings for decades of their lives, sometimes making pennies on the hour.
So how do we as a society get away from that model and towards something that provides equal opportunity?
Well, I think, you know, I want to take a minute just to talk a little bit about the stigma that you raised, because many people with disabilities being paid some minimum wages are themselves well below the poverty line, but a lot of times they live with family members who may or may not be below the poverty line themselves. But as far as the stigma is concerned, one of the most powerful comments our chairman at our agency ever heard as he was traveling around the country visiting work sites in which subminimum wages were paid was from a self-advocate with Down syndrome who told him that being paid subminimum wages because of his disability was like being called subhuman. And he made that connection in the words, subminimum and subhuman. And he said, since it's only for disabled people to be paid this subminimum wage, that self-advocate certainly bore a burden of stigma. And we've also heard from individuals who are now making competitive wages, but who were once employed at subminimum wages. And I remember one of them from our site visits up in Vermont told our agency during a site visit how excited she was to have had her first job. And that first job used to pay subminimum wages to her. And she was expecting a paycheck. And so when her first paycheck was to arrive, she had told her whole family that she was going to take them out for McDonald's to celebrate because she'd never made money before. And then sadly, when her paycheck did arrive, it was only for a couple of dollars for an entire work week. And she couldn't even afford to buy herself a hamburger at McDonald's. So, you know, I think those stigmas are really important to acknowledge. And your question about how do we kind of get past these with policies, you know, I think for some people with disabilities who receive subminimum wages, they've been at those jobs, some of them, sadly, for years or even decades of their life.
So, Rosina, how can our supporters go about helping CJAM with the situation?
Yeah, so the very first thing listeners can do is just directly go to cjam.ca and get a little bit more familiar with the situation that the station is going through. And maybe I'll just explain a little bit about why we're having the fundraiser. So we're going to be starting it, or we've starting it, and we're going to be doing it for a whole week. And the reason why we're doing this is because in January, the Ontario government announced that the Student Choice Initiative, which was a change in the post-secondary school system, will allow students to opt out of ancillary fees and some of the services that the university is providing will be deemed non-essential, and that includes CJAM. Now, even though students had voted previously for these ancillary fees, with this new change with the Student Choice Initiative, that kind of takes away that that power. So with that, that means that 70% of our annual budget is in jeopardy at the station, which could leave a giant hole in our funds. So we're going to hold this fundraiser, and you can go to cjam.ca to donate, or you can go directly to www.grouprev.com/CJAM emergency to donate via credit card or PayPal.
You know, it's really a tragedy that it's come to this. I know a lot of people are competing for resources. Mm-hmm. The fact is, CJAM gives a voice to groups that don't otherwise have it. The fact is, a lot of people just need to have their voices heard. They just need someone to say, I'm listening. Mm-hmm. I care. To that end, our next clip might be another familiar one from the Justice for Sali campaign. Now, you'll remember Solomon Fakiri was essentially allowed to die in prison simply because he wasn't taken quickly enough to a mental health facility. And that's the kind of thing that the world needs to know about, what CJAM is helping shed some light on. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Yusuf Fakiri, who will be telling us a little bit about his efforts to get justice in memory of his brother. Tell me a little bit about Solomon's story. What happened with him?
Well, the story of Suleiman Fakiri is a story of a gross injustice in recent memory in Canadian history. Here was a man with a known mental illness who needed help, who needed care, and in the end, he's killed by the very same individuals who were supposed to take care of him. Suleiman was diagnosed with schizophrenia when he was 19 years old during his first year at university. He spoke three languages, Arabic, English, and Farsi. He was a man with many talents. He played rugby and football competitively in high school. He was born at the University of Waterloo's engineering program, and that's when he was diagnosed in his first year. You know, the tragedy in all this is that the family tried their hardest to be able to support Suleiman when he was taken to custody, temporarily taken to custody at the Central East Correctional Center. Yet, in the four times that the family tried to see Suleiman, not once were we given permission or allowed to see him. And to this day, we have not been given a reason as to why we weren't able to see him.
So, the prison was aware that he had a mental illness.
Yes, he was, because in addition to the fact that it was well documented, I myself, with my younger brother, articulated to staff that Suleiman had a mental illness. They were well aware of his mental illness.
And in spite of this, they didn't allow you the chance to even talk with him?
No, not at all. We weren't able to talk to him at all in those 11 days.
So, what ultimately ended up happening during this time?
Well, as we've seen in some of the media reports, his mental health deteriorated as the days progressed in those 11 days. And the one support system that he needed was his family. And he wasn't given that because the authorities did not allow us to give him that support system.
So, since then, you've started a social justice campaign. Can you tell me a little about that?
Yes. So the Justice for Sully campaign was co-founded by myself, a couple of others, to call for justice for what happened to Suleiman, but also, just as importantly, to make sure that another family does not go through this difficulty, through this tragedy. We don't want a tragedy like Suleiman, the way, you know, that happened. Like, this is for Ashley Smith. This is for Justin Singh Tamuk, a fellow who had a mental illness in the Ottawa jail. He ended up losing his life. Cass Geddes, another man with a mental illness. Edward Snowshoe, Moses Beaver, Matthew Hines, Abdulrahman Hassan. These are people, you know, that we are also speaking out for, because we do not want another family to go through the pain and the heartache that my family is going through every day.
So, as I understand it, he was waiting to see a psychiatrist while in corrections, and there weren't adequate facilities. Do you have any thoughts as to what the prison should have on hand for people in his situation?
Well, the prison needs to have a proper and appropriate resources, you know, to support with people with mental illness. But people with mental illness should not be in prison to begin with. They need to be in hospitals. They need to be in facilities that have the appropriate training and treatment to be given to them. The caveat in the tragedy of my late brother as well is that my family made arrangements for him to be transferred to the Ontario Shores Centre for Mental Health. He was on his way, but he was waiting for a bed. That's the only reason he didn't go. He was just waiting for a bed. The next step is continuing to speak out, continuing to call for justice, to make sure that the new OPP investigation, you know, to make sure that the new, the investigation with the OPP that, you know, that the individuals that are responsible for my brother's death are held to account. We want to make sure people are held accountable with regards to what's happened to my brother. This is unacceptable. This is absolutely unacceptable and appalling what happened to a young man who needed help and instead loses his life in the very institution supposed to care for him. And in the end, that's the tragedy with mental illness. It is ultimately life and death, you know, if you have support or not. It took my family 11 years to keep Suleiman alive. It took the justice system 11 days for him to lose his life under their care.
CJAM also helps to bring to light those things the public needs to know about, just the stories behind the stories. A year ago, when the Broncos bus crash occurred, everyone knew just how tragic it was and how the families were affected. A year later, those same families are still fighting for better seatbelt laws, in effect to prevent disabilities. And CJAM is lucky to have a chance to bring out stories like that. This segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Patty Fair and Lyle Bronze from Buckle Up for Broncos. So tell me a little bit about the Buckle Up for Broncos campaign.
Well, the Buckle Up for Broncos was started out on as a Twitter hashtag. Excuse me. By one of the parents of 29 that were on the Broncos bus when it crashed, and it kind of grew from there.
we all started using the hashtag Buckle Up the Broncos and promoting the use of seatbelts on buses. And then it started out, there's also a Twitter account called Buckle Up the Broncos and a Facebook page called Buckle Up the Broncos, and all to promote the use of seatbelts on buses, because a lot of the buses have seatbelts, but the riders don't seem to use them, even though it's law in Saskatchewan that if seatbelts are available, that you have to use them. But there's very few people using seatbelts on buses, and we believe that a lot of our 16 that passed away on April 6th, 2018 would have survived that crash had they been wearing their seatbelts.
Or at the very least, the injuries might have been reduced for those
who
survived.
That's right.
So, if you don't mind my asking, could you tell me a little bit about your family members who were involved in the crash and what you would hope they would want you to do in regards to the campaign itself?
Well, Dana Bronze, the athletic therapist for the Humble Broncos, was my daughter, and I'm sure that she would want us to promote the use of seatbelts as much as possible. And I think she would be alive today had she be wearing hers. I'm not sure what more I can say about that. But
Patty, would you like to enter in on this?
I just think, unfortunately, we've all been given a voice, and I think we need to take this tragic crash, as well as all the others that happen across Canada every year, and try to make a difference. It is clear that something has to happen here. We have industry support asking for more regulation, more training. Where do you get industry support asking for things like that? Clearly, there's a problem in Canada, and I have the utmost respect for the families that have stepped forward from the Humboldt crash. We're trying to move this forward and trying to get our government to take a look at this and change our system. It's archaic. Europe has changed drastically. The United States has changed. How many more crashes are we going to encounter before something happens? And we have a national standard and national training put in place.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Since 1983, CJAM has broadcast on the FM dial from the University of Windsor campus. We represent the student body through campus-based news and sports programming. We highlight events in and around campus. Students come to CJAM to learn the basics of radio for free, and because of this training and experience, many move on to careers in broadcasting. Donate to the CJAM Emergency Fundraiser at cjam.ca or call in at 519-971-3630 in Windsor and anywhere else at 1-855-344-2526. CJAM 99.1 FM is reaching higher ground in Windsor, Detroit, and worldwide at cjam.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In today's show, we're hearing some of the best segments of this past year in an effort to really support and save CJAM concerning the recent funding issues. Rosina Ricardo from the station has been kind enough to join me to discuss these matters. So, can you tell me a little bit about what CJAM means to you?
Oh, definitely. Well, it all started actually before I even went to university. I've been walking around campus as a high school student and was almost recruited on the spot. I had met a, at the time, a volunteer programmer, and I told her that I was interested in a career in journalism, and she had told me that the station would train me on all the equipment for free and teach me how to speak on the radio, have a radio-friendly voice. And I thought that was really neat. And it's just things like that that really give CGM a... How do you say?
Maybe a unique outlook on things?
Exactly, yeah. And gives people an opportunity for a career in journalism if that's what they want. And certainly that's the goal towards what I'm looking towards. And yeah, and gives just a voice to minorities and people that are looking to raise awareness on issues that they're passionate about.
And I'm a forgetful person, so you're really going to have to help me out here. How, again, do people go about providing support in this way?
Absolutely. They can go to cgm.ca for more information about the cuts, and as well they can go to grouprev.com/CGM emergency.
And coming up next, something we hope you'll really like, one of those old-timey clips. Speaking of things people are passionate about at CGM, this is a story I was kind of outraged when I heard. Children being born to parents with intellectual disabilities are being summarily classified as abused or neglected at the time of birth. Now, I've only got 4 diplomas, so honestly, I can't figure out how that works. Maybe I'm not smart enough, I don't know. But honestly, hearing that, this is the kind of thing we as a people need to speak out against. Frankly, we can do better than that, folks, and I think we all know it.
And it started as individuals with cognitive challenges were beginning to live independently in the community, and with that came making choices to get married and become pregnant. And what happened was for many people, they instantly had their baby taken from them with the belief that they could not parent. And so we developed a program that supports parenting and helps teach parenting skills to people with different learning styles so that they can be successful parents. And so we now support about 125 families in the Calgary area. And most of those families do just fine parenting their kids with a little bit of help.
So are there any legal protections for these parents when it comes to their right to raise their own children?
It's weak. And because all the law is written so definitively from a point of view of protecting the child, it tends to err on the side of interfering or taking away the children, whether or not there's a reason to, with the genuine belief that that's better for the child. But it doesn't ever, it often overlooks, you know, how well the child would do if there were supports in place. Or what could change so that the baby could be raised absolutely safely in their own home with their own parents. And so just the way protection rules are written, it tends to discriminate against the parents. And the irony is the parent is charged with neglect or abuse in those cases. And at the moment of birth, that parent has not had any opportunity to abuse or neglect that baby, and yet that's what the documents say as they take the baby away. It's absolutely heartbreaking.
How is that even possible, to have abused a child who's minutes old?
Exactly. It really is the assumption that if they go home with that baby, they would then neglect or abuse the child. So it's a completely inappropriate statement.
Also, there is hard research, current research of Canadian files that show that parents with cognitive challenges are less likely to neglect or abuse their child than the average population.
Truth is, my friends, not all news is bad news, because CJAM also provides a unique opportunity for organizations that are really doing something different and remarkable to speak up as well. It's programs about women's issues, LGBT issues, cultural shows, disability issues, no bias there, none at all. But honestly, the people we represent, the people who speak, they're the ones who really share the story. It's not about the hosts. It's about what the hosts are passionate about bringing to the world. And if you're a music lover, much like me, you'll enjoy this next clip on music therapy.
Mm-hmm. Some of the key benefits is that music therapy has this unique ability to connect with people of all ages and abilities. So music therapists are actually working with clients across the lifespan. You can see music therapists working with infants and children all the way up to youth, young adults, and then the elderly population as well. And it also has this ability to meet and address so many of the human needs. So it can benefit physical health, cognitive health, verbal and communicative abilities, mental health, behavioral challenges, social abilities, personal development. So it really is able to not only benefit clients across the lifespan, but across so many different health domains. And I think that's one thing that's very unique to music therapy. So. And I think the reason why it also matters is because it's able to connect with some clients who maybe aren't able to respond to any form of therapy. You'll see maybe some clients with dementia or Alzheimer's, for example, how they are in long-term care facilities and maybe they're not responding to many of the stimulation and environment that is around them. But all of a sudden, they are engaged in a musical activity where one of their favorite songs is playing, and then you can just see the response in their eyes and in their body language. There's an instant connection there. So I think that's one of the great things.
My friends, because of CJAM, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of this planet. And yes, we've all seen Pride of the Mariners. But seriously, I am one of the luckiest reporters anywhere because I get to hear the stories no one else would go near. I get to hear from those people who are really making a difference. In this world today, it's so much easier for the bigger organizations to draw attention. They can just throw a check at something, make it disappear, or so they think. But as I've said so many times, it's the small organizations, run by one or two people with the biggest heart for this work. CJAM is a smaller organization in itself, but I can promise you, biggest hearts you'll find anywhere. These are people, they're not doing it for financial gain. They're doing it because the cultural landscape and our information base as a society can be better. Straight diet of vanilla desserts is fine. You can have that forever. But past a certain point, wouldn't you like a little variety? If nothing else, just to know what it's like to have something a little outside the mainstream. The fact is, we have to be looking toward the future. So a few political leaders made the mess of the financial crisis we're all in. It's not the problem or the fault of your everyday citizen. Your everyday citizen just wants to do their job, love their family, and maybe make the world a little bit better. And everyone at CJAM, I can promise you, is making this community and beyond just a little bit better. We're doing what we love to do, and it's my personal opinion we should be allowed to continue. So I'm asking for your help. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.